G'day leaders. I really enjoyed this podcast. It's an interview with a fabulous former pilot called John Davison. He was a colleague of our Captain Michelle for a long time, and he's got some fantastic stories about flying at the front of the plane and what he's been doing since he retired from flying. He's now flying drones, and it's quite an interesting story. He also shared how he was recently diagnosed with ADHD and how he's been able to turn it into his superpower. Enjoy.
Why did it count backwards? Oh no, that we're now recording.
What? Hello, Captain.
Oh, what do I
come fly with me. Let's fly. Oh,
what are we gonna talk about?
I don't know. So leadership, life, and everything else.
Yeah.
And we're live in Geelong.
Yeah, we're in Geelong, but we're recording.
In Geelong. And we have a special guest, and Michelle, I'm going to let you introduce him because you know him much, much better than I do.
I do. This is John Davison, who I know from aviation.
Many moons.
Many moons, yes. Yeah. It's been, Rex.
Rex, yeah. You then, were one of our instructors at the start.
That's you? Right, yeah. I was. And then I remember
myself and Chris up the back.
And then we went to Virgin together.
Yeah.
We did our endorsement on the 737.
Crash buddies.
Yeah, we were crash buddies. And then we did our paycheck sim together.
Yes, we did. And on my birthday too, it was, remember?
That's right. So then we had celebratory beers at 7 a.m. at the airport.
Yep. 7.
7
a.m. How many bars were open at 7 at the airport?
Oh, the airport.
It's the airport.
Airport.
24 hours.
That's right.
As you do.
Yeah.
All right, so known each other for a long time.
We have. Yeah. And then, so yeah, John, and we were on the 737 together. We started together. And then you went off on the A330.
330, yeah. Just realised domestic wasn't for me.
That's right.
Yeah. Had to do something different.
So what routes did you fly?
I was at the start, there was only really one.
Roots routes.
I knew what you were saying.
There we go.
Perth, and it was really exciting. We either went Melbourne-Perth, Sydney-Perth, Brisbane-Perth.
Okay, yeah. So a lot of Perth.
Yeah, well, I'm a simple bloke, so we just keep it as simple as possible. And yeah,
I may have flown with you. I go to Perth a fair bit.
You probably would have.
Yeah.
It's quite funny.
Thanks for making us get to the airport at midnight. That's fun.
I hate you getting put at midnight. It's just, you know, how the plans start, isn't it, Michelle? It's totally different how it finishes on most trips you do.
Yeah. So a lengthy career in aviation.
Yeah.
What did you learn sitting at the front of the plane? I've had the privilege of listening to all of Michelle's fantastic stories, but what about yourself? What sort of lessons did you learn?
Well, you know, it's like what you talk about on the podcast, and I've become passionate in human factors and non-technical skills, and which led to teaching it, facilitating it in Virgin.
Okay, if you could just come in a bit closer.
Yep.
That's it.
Perfect. Yeah, facilitating it at Virgin and doing course builds and things like that within the company, which led to then sort of like a welfare person sometimes. So if people were getting in, not achieving a level that they should be as a pilot, I would get called up and just have a general chat. It was always not formal. I might be flown to Perth for a couple of times just to sit in the cafe at the airport and talk to some guys who were failing checks.
Okay.
And there could be various reasons, and that was part of my reason for being there, was just to talk in an informal situation and see what is going on with that individual and... yeah, see if we can help them out.
So you taught human factors, similar to Michelle.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Michelle and
John,
I.
John was my boss.
Ah, there you go.
Oh, I think I helped you out a few times. Yeah. I wouldn't say boss.
Yeah. So I like learning that pilots learn about human factors. So the things that could contribute to, you know, I won't say accidents, but...
Accidents and incidents. Mm. Aviation is... pretty much all human factors, really.
Ever since the introduction of the jet, what did they realise? Suddenly it's not the mechanics that are failing, it's the human behind it.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. So we learnt from the 70s onwards that we may need to, you know, increase our awareness of how we operate and integrate with people and machinery.
And it was not only pilots, it's every human touch point. Mm. There was an issue, basically.
Because, they first thought it was the pilots, pilot error.
Yes.
But then we started to realise, cabin crew... maintenance
engineering
stuff.
Baggage.
All had a part to play.
So I guess when you're teaching it, you'd be telling stories about incidents that
have
happened.
It's the best way.
Do you have any off the top of your head that you can
share? For my type of stories? Yeah, there's all, you know, there's lots. It happens quite often.
Yeah.
You know, I remember listening to your podcast and you told the story about the fuel scenario. I've got a similar one. And I continued on the flight. It was like we rocked up to Perth, got the weather.
Yep.
And like Michelle says, you can read between the lines of how the weather's going to change. You know, it's never, most of the time it's never as it's written on the forecast. And you can see there's little indicators and you go, something's going to change here. And we used to have a rule of thumb, didn't we, Michelle? When if there was an inter, which means take an extra 30 minutes worth of fuel because weather could change, we would take a tempo, which is 60 minutes. So we'd always go to that next level just as a mitigator.
Thank you for saying that. As a passenger.
And so that was a rule of thumb, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know,
if it was an inter, take a tempo. If it was a tempo, take an alternate.
I love it. How you guys have your own language. Michelle and I have coffees in the morning and she tells me stories and she's using language nobody else could possibly identify. But yeah, I like that. That was good.
And I remember rocking up and I could see that we were going to need, I think it was an inter from memory. And it's like, well, let's look at it. I'm in my head because I rock up. I have my figures in my head already.
Yep.
You let the skipper come up with his idea and you sit there and you go, sort of like a negotiation, buying a car, isn't it? And he was pretty much said, no, there's no requirement. So we're going to take the legal fuel, which is the extra 30 minutes. Technically, I didn't have a leg to stand on because what he's doing is exactly right.
Yeah.
And but all it means to me is I've got to be at a higher level of alertness when we're flying over because you're going over the bite, you lose radio transmission. Sometimes you're on HF or via data link. So you just know that you've got to be on the ball looking for weather updates because you're thinking things are going to change anyway. So that's what happened. And yeah, we've flown along a beam Adelaide. So we're doing one of the deep south routes. So we're right off the coast.
Yeah.
That's usually my time to go, right, let's start thinking about Melbourne, and pulled up the weather. And sure enough, we needed that extra 30 minutes worth of fuel.
You weren't going to make it.
And we didn't have legally requirement to continue.
Okay.
So at that stage, you know, it's like, The skipper, who had pretty much his feet up on the dash and didn't care.
Ooh.
And I alerted him, sort of printed off the weather, and I said, there you go, mate. We now need to find some more fuel.
Up here in the air.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd already been thinking about it.
Yeah.
And on route, once you're actually in the air, your requirements do change from when you're on the ground before you go. So you can get creative with your pencil to make it, but... Did you have enough even with...
Yeah, in the end we had enough, but it was prompting the skipper to come to that extra higher of alertness to let's start thinking about how we're going to do this. Mm. I had already thought, you know, we can also increase altitude. Yeah. We can slow down and play with the figures. The skipper's only idea was let's ring him up, see if we can get the traffic holding taken off or anything reduced. And that was the only idea you come up with. And they certainly came back and said no. And so then we had this problem. So, you know, you just have to work with the skipper and sort of prompt them, because you can't go, right, let's do this. I can't, because then the command gradient changes.
Yes.
Suddenly your FO is now in control of what's going on.
Yep.
So you've got to be very diplomatic when you're sitting in the right-hand seat. You've got to lead them into making a decision and without them, know, getting off upset.
And their ego, you've got to maintain. It's very fragile.
So you'd have quite strong powers of persuasion and influence, I'm guessing.
Sometimes I can, my wife actually hates it because she knows sometimes I do it with her.
Okay. Don't use those techniques with me.
I call it planting the seed and then letting it fester.
It becomes their idea.
And she thinks I'm playing those mind games with her. But I don't. I said, honey, I never do that with you. I use that with my children as well. You know, I don't use a confrontational type of parenting with my kids. Mm. But it's plant a seed, let them think about it.
Yeah.
And they come up with their own ideas. They might make mistakes, but... Who cares? Making mistakes are great, so they learn from it even better.
Absolutely.
But back to the flying, it's, you know, it's one of those things where you've got to nurse the situation through. But there's multiple of those. I had a really bad one coming out of Bali where we lost all the toilets, weren't functioning. I think I've told you it. Do you know about that one?
No, you haven't. No? You haven't.
So passing 18,000 feet, and with study after, I realised that 18,000 feet, there's a pressure switch. And if something goes wrong, it shuts the toilets off. And I didn't realise that one at the time. It wasn't in our little... Remember that little handbook we had? What was it called?
I'm picturing all these guys in Bintang singlets, sunburn, and probably a few cans in.
Exactly. Yeah. And, yeah, that's what I... that was the immediate thing that went through my head was like, oh, we've got Barley Belly on board, definitely. And we have no toilets and we have six and a half hours of flying back to Melbourne.
There is a requirement within... So many hours, you need so many toilets functioning. So if there are none, and with so many people on board as well. So,
yeah, and the skipper at that time said, oh, yeah, no worries. It was the cabin crew came up and she says, oh, we've got no toilets. And the skipper goes, yeah, okay, no worries. So I'm looking at him going, okay, well, what are we going to do? Well, let's manage this problem. I said, do we ring up the company? Do we want to turn around? Because we're only passing 18,000 feet. We're not that far away from Bali. Dempasar, so let's turn around and go back. Or, we're going to Melbourne.
6 hours.
6 hours. Six and a half hours.
Was the skipper's car parked in Melbourne?
Yeah. the funny thing is, I'm like, why is he motivated to keep going?
Yeah, he paid for 3 days.
Yeah. And then, so once again, you've got to, all right, let's play this game again.
Yeah.
With the diplomatic game and... the assertive game, and it's like, how do you elevate, at what stages it starts going through your head, and trying to prompt again, Perth's not that far away.
International Airport.
Even better, let's just call the company and let them make the decision for us, because that's an easy one. You can't stuff that one up, because it's there. Then they take the responsibility. Yeah, yeah.
Responsibility tennis.
I think you did responsibility tennis. There we go. Right. So hand it back to them. No. No, mate, we're going to Melbourne. And I said, let's just call the company up on HF anyway, and we'll just see what they think. He actually physically slapped my hand.
No way.
Away. Wow. And said, what point you don't get, we're going to Melbourne. And I'm like, okay. So this, it went from, okay, now we're not going to go anywhere else. Like, is this an area where I need to take control of the aircraft?
Yeah,
it's not.
Captain, you must have said
no. No one's going to die. No, the aircraft's not falling out of the
room. I don't know. With the number of passengers out the back of the Barley Bellies, I think there could be.
Yeah, there could be some serious sicknesses, and there was. It actually got on the news.
What I was going to say. This captain is clearly not thinking about what's going to happen when they land, and all these passengers go straight to the media, straight to social media.
Yeah, and I wasn't thinking about that at the time, but then as you're coming into land, I thought, there's... People are probably going to start texting.
That was my first thought.
Yeah.
Well, I remember Pete Sherry. I did my command course with him, and he said, always remember what is the front page going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, going back a bit, it was actually a Jetstar flight to Darwin had been cancelled. So, because we only had 60 passengers originally, and then suddenly we had like 130 passengers from the Jetstar flight that was cancelled going to Darwin. And I said to the skipper, we'll make a lot of Jetstar passengers happy if we divert to Darwin. Then they don't have to go to Melbourne and then catch the flight back to Darwin.
Yeah.
How about, and their 24-hour engineering, we could lug in there, we could actually get it fixed, probably back down to Melbourne within our duty time. Wouldn't disrupt anyone. And he just shut off, wasn't interested, got his iPad out and started watching a movie. And so then I had to click into about how do we mitigate what's about to happen. So we've got three toilets that don't function, but capacity to still hold something, right? So we shut two toilets off, do a PA saying we have an issue with the toilets, we're going to be limited use, only people that really need to go can go. We're reducing the amount of alcohol just because that flushes through. Looking at turning recirc fans off because once a plane gets full, it starts getting smelly.
Yeah.
All because the skipper wasn't entertaining any other option.
Wow.
We flew all the way to Melbourne.
You did?
Yeah, flew all the way to Melbourne. When I landed on runway 27, I was actually scared to pull the aircraft. Get a nose high attitude as I was flaring because I thought I might spill.
Yeah.
And as we landed, a mate of mine who's the engineer who helped me start Fieldmasters as well, one of the original starters of Fieldmasters, he was getting off the aerobridge, getting on, and he goes, what happened, mate? And I said, and as he walked in, he could smell. And later on talking to him, he goes, that was disgraceful. It was everywhere. It took him ages. That day, actually take it offline for a little bit to clean the aircraft.
Wow.
What happened to old mate? He's one of them protected ones.
Okay. And
from back in the 80s.
And say no more.
And they told him, like, it was funny because then a week later I was rostered to fly with them again.
Yeah.
And when you go to the terminals, you print off what's wrong with the aircraft.
Yep.
Toilets are unserviceable. And it was going to Sydney, so it wasn't a big deal. One, I think one was – so I picked the piece of paper up and threw it at him, and I said, what is it with you and bloody toilets, mate? And he goes, oh, yeah, I nearly lost my fourth stripe because of that.
Yeah.
So he was he got put on probation again, and they were thinking about it, but, yeah, people would have helped him out because he is a protected species. So.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's just –
wow, I'm a bit speechless.
Yeah.
I could only imagine being one of the passengers down the back and knowing what I know now about that story, there was other options.
The thing is, though, as well, that this is a leader, so this is your boss.
Yeah.
And you can't storm out.
Yeah. Hold on a second. You told me a story about a young lady stabbing the captain in the hand while he was having a heart attack.
Yeah, but you...
can you just quickly tell that story now? Yeah. Just to give everyone...
Yeah, I've tried to find it online and I can't. And John, you may know, actually. Yep. It was one that we had, and I can't remember which year it was in NTS.
Oh, one of the...
human factors courses.
Yep. So it was a story you told in the training.
It was, and it was the... Chinese female FO, and her captain had a heart attack on final with his hands on the controls, and because of the heart attack he actually grasped the thrust levers and he was going deviating off slope, and she kept calling it and he wouldn't release or listen. Mm-hmm. So she grabbed the pen out of her pocket and stabbed the back of his hand, which the reflex action, he released his grip and she was able to take over.
Smart person.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I could ever think of that at that moment in time. Well, like, I would have just been silly and wrestled the fight.
Well, see, the thing that I think we told that story is because of the steep cockpit gradient.
Yeah.
And because in the culture, different cultures.
Yeah, definitely.
And the fact that it was male-female in that culture. Yeah. And for her to have won the presence of mind to do that, but to do it even because it may, you know, she's harming him and, but she saved the aircraft.
That's amazing. You know, you credit to her. It's good thinking.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love those stories of outside the box. Yeah. So what I'm going to do is stab that person. It's a real... reflex to take their hand off
and get an award for it.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Yeah, I would have been silly and just tried to wrestle him. And
what got you into the air in the first place? What got you into aviation?
The old man loved flying.
Yep.
Never had the opportunity to be a pilot, but tried to get in as an engineer, but never quite made it. And life changes things, and ended up becoming a technician, electronics tech. But always used to take me to the airport.
Yeah.
You know, got photos of me out front of Tull Marine as a little kid. And,
Where the bug bit you.
Yeah, that's where the bug bit me. And
do you also describe yourself as an aerosexual?
Probably was back in the day, but not now.
Not now.
Yeah, lots changed now. It's airlines ruined my love of aviation.
Okay.
Yeah. I was that. I loved my GA flying.
Yeah.
That's general aviation.
General aviation. Light planes.
Thank you. Well done.
So, pick me up if you need to explain.
No, that's okay. I'll try because I'm the dumb here. So, you guys use language that no one understands.
I was going to say sorry to you at the start about some acronyms or some pilot language about to talk in front of.
I lived 12 years in Canberra. I heard every TLA there is. Three-letter acronyms in my bag.
Yeah.
Guy says I have a skill to be able to seek out a pilot in any room.
Oh,
I can
tell. Amazing.
I can see them.
Amazing. So we'll be at a restaurant and we're just eating a lovely meal, and then all of a sudden Michelle's like sits up like
meerkat.
Yeah. Right? A meerkat. She's looking around. Somebody said HUD or somebody said this or something that. And then
one menu.
And then she's calling across the restaurant, hey, what do you fly? Yeah. And then he's yelling back and they're having a conversation across the restaurant, across everyone's heads. It's brilliant. Yeah.
And then after that, we left like 40 minutes later and he goes, oh, I'll catch you later.
Yeah. as if you walk past in the airport.
Yeah. No, and you usually do. You'd walk past the airport and go, hey, didn't we just see each other?
Yeah.
It's, you know, when you did a few overseas trips, obviously, in the 330 and... you'd rock up at the hotel room there, and you know it's a crew hotel and purely crew because you go downstairs and it's just all these people and you're all just
all men in jeans and sneakers and maxi dresses and active
expensive
wear.
Watches, because that seems to be a thing that pilots watches. Buy. Yeah, yeah. There's watches. I've got to get myself a Tag Heuer watch or something like
that.
Yeah. So you can tell them from a mile away, and or else they'll tell you anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So can you tell us the story about how you stopped flying and what you're doing now?
Yeah, so COVID. But before then, I started to dabble in drones.
Yep.
That same engineer that walked on, good friend, so it was Chris's brother, who you know, Chris, yep. So the Storen family, yep. who were quite well known in aviation circles. So Dave was down at the beach on holidays with him, and he said, I've just started a drone business. Do you want to get involved? And I said, yeah. And that was about 2016. But things changed, and we actually got nearly sued for having the same company name as another company up in New South Wales.
Okay.
That was our first introduction to copyright and yep. things like that. And
yep.
realised we didn't have a leg to stand on. And
we saw a Top Gun crane the other day.
Yeah, we should be giving logo. Them
free advertising. I'm thinking, how'd they get away with
that? So I was into drones then, and we brought one of the first civilian thermal drones over. I had to sign paperwork for the Department of Defence to bring it over.
Oh, wow.
And we thought we would go and do solar panel inspections and while we're flying, because every pilot's got to have a side gig.
We had a drone company.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yes. Yeah. We almost started doing the training with you.
That's and, right, yeah.
Had a previous experience with drones. Mm-hmm. And I ended up, after we shut that business down, I ended up just a little business I had selling drones to farmers. So driving out to their properties, because it's hard for a farmer to travel anywhere to find a drone. And yeah. a lot of them like to see something in real life.
Of course.
Play around with it, see if it works on their property. So I sort of specialised in driving out to some weird farms, which I just love doing anyway, just seeing these properties. And teaching these fellas how to fly and fly the drone and use it for what they needed to use it on the farm. Never made any real money out of it, but I just enjoyed helping people out. And, like one experience was a guy that was 75, had emphysema, struggling to get around his property, getting in and out of the ute. Taught him how to fly this drone. I marked a cross on his lawn and said, just take off from here every time and press the auto part. And I've already made the flight path for you. You'll see everything. And he nearly cried. He said, you've just given me another 5 years on the property.
Oh, wow.
So I thought, here you go. Here's a technology that's now changing people's lives.
He can do all his fencing inspections.
Yeah. And plus all his mates thought it was fantastic. Here he is.
Yeah.
Up with the latest technology, flying a drone around the property. You can have a cup of tea. I sit the iPad there and just check the gates, the troughs, the feed points, the cows, all from one spot. So I continued doing that. It was an older lady. She was about 82, living on the property herself now. Husband passed away, and over the hill was the boundary of the property, and people were poaching.
Oh.
So she wanted to try and catch them. So. Yeah. It took me a couple of days to train this lady how to fly a drone. And then she, 3 days after teaching her, she sent me some photos. She said, I got the buggers. She got the number plates. So awesome. Changing people's lives.
What were they tagging? Like sheep or?
No, just deer. And deer. In that area is a lot of wild deer.
Okay,
and
yeah.
We have big deer issues here in Victoria, and people will poach on people's property, shoot illegally. So she found, got their number plates and... Yeah, so it was great. But then when COVID happened, another mate, Jimmy Duran.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Jimmy, myself, and we were sort of sat there and thought, let's give this drone business a go, like a real go. And at that time, I was, as we found out, I'm ADHD, so I can't sit in a room or in a house for too long. And my wife doesn't like it. I think aviation worked out really well because I was hardly ever at home.
Yeah.
So, but being in COVID and being at home all the time, I think Cal was about to kill me.
Mm.
So I had a tractor post driver and I went out fencing.
Yeah.
Because agriculture was accepted as a business. Of course, an industry.
COVID, yeah, required.
So I used that money. It became quite successful, that business. And I used that money to build up Fieldmaster Systems and paid Jimmy a bit of a wage to make phone calls and connections and build the business up. Dave came in on board. And and before you knew it, we had one of our first few jobs. We found it really hard because it's a technology that people don't know they need. And that's probably one of the hardest things is it's easy if I'm a fencer because people know I need a fence done.
Yeah.
But drones...
And they can see it. as well.
See, it's proven. Yes. You know, they know what a fence is. Where drones is new, and a lot of people, a lot of industries don't know they need a drone. So it was really hard. We had to beat doors down. Parks Victoria and a few other organisations said, oh, you'll never find deer or pigs out in the bush. The canopy's too thick. Thermal won't work. And we just said, just give us a try. Give us a try. And then there was just one guy in Deka, which is like our DPI, version of DPI here in Victoria. He had some funding from the bushfire recovery from the 2020 fires. Yep. And he said, I want to find out if the pigs are coming back in from New South Wales. And I need you to follow that fire burn right through Victoria. So he gave us our first go, and it went from there, and we built a reputation of these guys that we're the guys that if you want to send into the middle of nowhere and find animals, then give us a call.
Wow.
So yeah, and loved it because I used to sit there with the boys and think, government's paying us to go camping and fly drones.
That's cool, isn't it?
How good is this?
Yeah.
And yeah, so we've had our ups and downs. Like this year has been really bad with the economy, so and especially governments. You know, it's pretty easy to pull funding on looking for animals, or our other side of the business is weed spraying with larger drones.
Okay.
So weeds don't complain when there's no funding, so it's easy to pull that one. So we found at the start of the year that we really struggled, and that's just part of business. It's starting to really pick up in this last 2 months. It's unbelievable what's happening.
So you're doing what I tell the kids all of the time, either find what you love, make it your job, or decide to love your job. You've got two choices in life, but either one, you're going to love what you're doing.
Right? You've got to love. We only get one shot of this, to be honest. And I think we lose that fact.
Yeah.
And we get stuck in that routine of getting up and doing what we know to do. And, you know, you talk to pilots, they do it now because that's all they know.
That's right.
And they think their skills can't be transferred to other industries, but I know now that those skills are
I'm looking at someone right now who has transferred all of her skills. Yeah. We often talk about how during life you're going to try different jobs and stuff like that. But every single job, every single experience is another tool in your toolkit. And Michelle's toolkit's so bloody big. If we printed out her CV, it'd
be crazy.
You'd chop down half the Amazon.
Yeah.
Oh, you haven't said that for a few episodes. Thank you.
I think that's brilliant that you're using your passion and what you love.
I actually look forward to packing the car up and going away flying drones.
So can we talk a little bit more about the ADHD, if that's okay? I'm really fascinated in that. Because I believe that all neurodivergents are superpowers.
Yeah.
Because I started to think this way. I've been a trainer for a very long time. And in one of my courses many, many years ago, I had a bunch of IT people in the room.
Yeah.
And I've got a background in IT, and we're all pretty geeky, nerdy sort of thinkers. And this one kid, he was the youngest. And every time I asked a question, because we were doing, I think it was leadership training, and he was a young leader, and every time I asked a question, he had a very rambling but very poignant answer. And the rest of the people are in the room, and they're all quiet and shy, and they're all looking at him thinking, where's all this stuff coming from? And but then they were almost judging him, right?
Yep.
Because he always had an answer, and they thought he was being a bit arrogant. Anyway, I asked a question, and he started answering, and he said, oh, and because of my Asperger's. And I said, go deeper on that. And he did, and he started to talk about it. And then everyone in that room, none of them had heard the term before. This was many, many years ago.
Yeah.
And then he started to talk about how it helps him with this, but it doesn't help him with that, and he can't recognize this, but it's a superpower there. And ever since then, I've loved talking about how we're all different, and our differences give us superpowers. So what's your superpower?
Yeah, well, it's being able to think about solutions outside the square and practical stuff, like my business partners and all that know that Jono comes up with some really crazy ideas that make sense once we talk through it. Because as you say, that gentleman you talk about, I can babble on. You really got to listen to what I'm saying to make sense of what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because my brain's already thought about it and moved on.
Yes.
Yeah. You're way and past it. You're down the track.
Yeah, I don't structure the sentences too well. But then once they listen to me, they go, oh, that could work. And then I think that's been a really good thing about our business, is that we've got a couple of world's firsts at Fieldmasters. And I think it's because our ability to use all our superpowers. Like Alistair and Dave don't have the issues that I have, but they have engineering and technical skills. So I come up with these harebrained ideas of how we're going to solve someone's problem.
Yeah.
Those guys will make it happen. And so using all those skills, but yeah, my original idea is it works. And I can just see things in my head. I can see, I call them angles. Mm. I can see from different angles. And so when someone comes to me with a problem, my brain's already ticking away. Yeah. I'm going to solve this problem. Yesterday, yeah. I was down here in Geelong talking to a nursery that wants to develop drone operations. And they're giving me their problems. And I'm already, my brain just starts ticking. Mm. And I've already come up with some crazy ideas that my business partner's going, oh, I don't know about that one, John. I said, just let me have a go. Let me try this one.
Yeah, yeah.
So I look at that as I can just see from different angles. I can see things that other people don't see.
Do you think that not knowing that you had ADHD, but why you liked GA more? Because we were always having to come up with solutions.
Yeah.
Because we had very old aircraft and we're landing in remote areas, weird places, and had to be thinking on our feet all the time about coming up with, I had a landing strut failure. So I had to, I had the town behind me and we reconstructed a landing strut and different.
Get the aeroplane bogged during wet season up at north.
And so you're always having to, it was something new, whereas maybe airline flying, because it's
monotonous.
Or it's on rails.
Yeah.
Thankfully for the passengers, but,
Yeah. And I sort of think airlines was what sort of hid my ADHD, because it's just routine. You do the same thing over. And I struggle with learning. I knew that. Like, I've known that for a long time, that someone could teach me something on the board and I'm looking at it, I'm trying to focus, but it's just nothing happening. Mm. And I had to struggle, study 3 or 4 times harder than anyone else.
I was going to say, learning to be a pilot is a lot of study.
It is.
How did you do it?
I failed so many times. ATPLs. Don't ask me how many times I tried to attempt exams. Like, there were 7 exams that we used to have to do. For even commercial, I think back in those days, the commercial one was 1 exam.
Yeah.
I think it's changed to 7. So
yeah, it was 1 and ATPL was 7.
Yeah. And I could never afford to do courses, so I had to self-study all the time. And so I just attempt these tests and fail all the time.
And they cost money.
I'm stubborn. Yeah, very. That's probably my other superpower. If you tell me I can't do something, I'm
going to
do it.
Well, that's what I found, though. This is what kids have to learn. Like, so many kids who have been diagnosed with ADHD, they have a go at something and they just give up. It's almost like they've been allowed to give up.
Yeah.
Whereas it is a superpower if you push through. And I mean, I don't want to.
Was there any technique that you used, or if someone taught you something, if you went to a course, and was there a technique that where you could get it? Was it doing it or was it?
Yeah, I taught myself that I had to break through, like reading the manuals. Yeah. I have to break everything up into small pieces and go over that maybe 5 or 6 times and then keep asking myself, what is that actually saying?
Yeah.
So I'd have to go over and go, what do they mean by what's just written in that paragraph?
Hmm.
Go over it, understand it. Write in my notes in Jono's way.
Yeah.
So at this stage, you didn't know you had ADHD.
No.
So you found a solution.
Yeah.
And you weren't holding yourself back.
No, because I remember in year 10, the careers teacher said, you will never be a pilot.
Yeah.
And I've got a plumber's apprenticeship for you. She had organised a plumber's apprenticeship.
I know a similar story. Michelle, you'll never be a pilot when we become pilots.
Right. Year 10 careers advisors.
Yeah, I remember listening to you one too. It's like it's the same, it's...
Were you told that you'd have to wear tampons every flight?
No.
Michelle was.
Isn't it the funniest thing how we look back now and the way they look at females and flying and it's just, we laugh now. But it must have been traumatic for you because, I only just had a learning difficulty, but you had society.
A genital.
Yeah, society.
The wrong one.
Yeah. And it's, you look at some of the old school female pilots.
Yeah.
And legends.
Yeah.
The way they've paved the way. Mm. And, Michelle's one of them that's paved the way as well. And now you look at, every now and again, you look at these pictures of new courses coming through for cadetships, mostly females.
That's right.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
No, it's great.
Yeah, that's great. And I hope Michelle's book will come out hopefully next year.
Mm.
And I'm flabbergasted by some of the stuff that she had to go through.
There are some secrets in there.
There are some secrets in there.
As a male, all you had to do is be really good at being social and drinking to become a pilot, and it's not that hard, and pass the exams.
Yeah.
Michelle had to fight against everything else.
Yeah, you know, all the stigmas.
And we were one of the blokes as well. We were one of the guys.
She can tell a joke.
Sometimes
like
they can party better than us. Yeah.
I'm thinking of one particular female pilot who could drink most male pilots under the table.
Yeah, put us to shame.
Yeah, actually two.
Maybe three,
yeah,
maybe four.
Yeah, actually there are quite a few, yeah.
Yeah, once again, alcoholism is huge in aviation.
It is, isn't it? It's the social lubricant.
Yeah, what else are you going to do in an overnight?
Yeah, you had a lot of time with your crew, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah, it just becomes the norm, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, unfortunately, yeah. But with your ADHD, when you got diagnosed... How did you get diagnosed?
Yeah, funny is that we had a Vic Forest contract, so I don't know if you knew what happened here, Victoria, last year, is that greater gliders, court injunction, weren't allowed to chop forests down in our native timber anymore because it was supposedly killing arboreal animals and endangered animals like greater gliders and yellow bellies. So at the court injunction said if Vic Foresters chop anything else down, they'd have to do surveys before, and it would be drone surveys, thermal surveys at night. So we were one of the lucky contractors to get the gig. And anyway, I'm sitting out in the middle of the forest with one of my business partners, Alistair, and he goes, a good mate of mine has just been diagnosed with ADHD, and Jono, you are exactly like him.
Right.
And he goes, I think you should probably get tested. And I said, it's funny because I've always had it in the background that because my nephews have ADHD, my family has a long history of alcoholism, drug abuse from my mother's side. And, you know, all that, as you learn later on, that that's ADHD people, really, high cases of alcoholism and drug abuse. And so I've always had that in the back of my mind. I thought, you know what, bugger it. Let's go and find out if I actually do have it. So I went and spoke to my doctor and my local doctor, and he did the test and he had a bit of a giggle to himself. And he goes, yeah, you do have it, mate. And he's known me for a few years and he goes, I'm pretty sure you had it. You know, I knew you had it. So off I went to a psychologist or psychiatrist and a specialist in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a couple of the official tests, and I had to prove that I had it when I was 12 years old. And funny enough, my dad still had all the reports from school. And now looking back at it as a 45-year-old, you go, yeah, it's, you know, John can't focus, John's disruptive, you know, John needs to stop rushing, all these things. And the last appointment I had with the psychiatrist before I was officially diagnosed, he just laughed and said, it's amazing you achieved what you achieved in your life. He goes, with the, like, because I ticked off every symptom, so a very high level ADHD. He says, if I see someone with your level of ADHD, you're either a criminal or a drug abuser.
Wow.
So
I'm a pilot.
I fly people around the world.
Yeah, that's right. I feel safe.
So, I'm thinking there's probably many, many pilots who have ADHD undiagnosed.
It would, I was asking before, would it help you? Sure it would. No. The ADHD. What are the skills that it gives you that then contributes to your success?
Yeah, and it does. But then also I had a lot of deep anxiety that no one ever knew because I always knew I wasn't as good as anyone else. Mm. I always had this feeling in my head that I'm not smart. You know, I have to do all this stuff. I look at everyone else passing their exams and doing everything, and here's Jono on his fifth attempt at trying to pass something. So I always thought I was like an imposter. I wasn't the level of everyone else, and probably no one else knew that, but that's how I felt. And but when I was diagnosed, I was like, suddenly that curtain came up.
Yeah.
I thought, I know what's wrong, and you know, everyone has that stigma about the medication, but it's changed my life. So I'm back studying.
Can you explain how
I'm back studying now? Oh, so fantastic. I'd have an aversion to doing any study because I just knew how bad it was, and it was like getting nails drilled into me if I had to try and read, and I just thought it was a waste of time.
Career, it'd be almost PTSD.
I hate reading.
Yeah,
I hated reading, but now I can sit in front of a screen and study and read and actually motivate myself to do it.
Thanks to the medication.
Yeah. So for me, it's changed my life.
That's brilliant.
And for some, you know, there's other. Doesn't work for everyone, but it worked for me, that's all I can say. And I was glad that the psychologist that put me on, he thought the right medication, like it was also a binge eating. So Michelle, you probably knew I was overweight.
I just thought you were flying a wide body. That's what happens. The wide body guys get wide bodies. They do. You watch them because you just get fed so well.
Yeah.
And you're on the longer flight.
It's a longer flight.
So it's coffee and Bickies or...
Yeah. Because... And because my body doesn't produce dopamine, as you know, when you start researching about ADHD, I was looking for that hit.
Okay.
And food was my hit.
Yeah.
Not drugs, but food. So I just would eat and eat. And, you know, at one stage last year, I was up to 118 kilos.
Wow.
You don't look
93 and a half now.
Wow.
So, I had cheated a little bit. I got onto a medical trial. Another version of Ozempic.
Really?
Yeah, so within 2 months I've lost 20 effects. Kilos, but the rest I've lost just because...
2 months, 20?
Yeah, dropped big time. Over 2 kilos a that week I was losing at one stage.
Extraordinary.
Wow. Yeah, I looked gaunt. You know, they call it the Ozempic face.
Because your skin hadn't caught up yet.
Yeah, hadn't caught up. So, but as each month went by, or each fortnight I think it was, they upped the dose. I got to the point where my skin felt like I was sunburned all over. I couldn't sleep, so I had to get off it.
Yeah.
So I couldn't complete. It was a year trial, but I couldn't complete it. It was just the effects on me.
I spoke recently to a speaker. He escaped prison, and so that's part of his speaking. But he went on Ozempic recently,
yep.
And his mental health deteriorated so much. Mm. He put himself into hospital, and... Yep. Even weeks after going off it, he's still having recurring bouts of depression or depressive episodes. And so...
The research company was actually quite good. Like they're always... Okay, they had a team that looks after you. So they're calling you. You go in there, I think it's every fortnight, I think it was, get weighed, blood samples, all that sort of stuff. And you can call them up if you're feeling bad or if you're... any symptoms. So they were good. And once I started to flag that this symptom that was coming along, it was actually well known in it. And they just took me off it straight away and said,
Well, you look great, mate.
Yeah, I feel good. You know, it's funny when you lose weight, all your other health symptoms just fall into place.
Yeah.
You know, being at a good weight, it sort of cures everything else. And so I sort of keep up with that now. But the ADHD tablets that I take, Vyvanse, also helps with binge eating. So I don't binge eat anymore.
Because you're getting the dopamine hit?
Dopamine hit, okay. Yeah. I'm not looking for food all the time. Like if I was driving in the car, I thought, I'll need some chips beside me to keep me occupied while I'm driving in the car.
Okay.
Things like that. And but now I don't. Yep. And I eat. Sometimes now I've got to remind myself to eat. It's just one of those things that you go, I haven't had lunch today. I probably should eat something.
Yeah.
So it's helped me out a long way. And like the doctor said, when... I was diagnosed officially and medicated at the end of January, and then February 14th, my house burnt down in a lithium fire. And
was that from the drains?
No, it was, you know, those little portable battery banks that we, power banks that we use to keep our phones charged if we're on the go.
Yeah.
Because we lost power from storms.
Yeah.
I was charging one of them via a generator and, it was in my spray trailer. We got a little off-grid battery with solar panels. So I had the inverter on and I was running a cable, extension cable from the inverter into the house, keeping the fridge and the freezer going. But then I had one of those little RCD power banks, GPOs, and I was just charging those two power banks to so we had something at night to keep our phones charged. I went to work into the city early. My youngest daughter was at home because the school had lost power, so no school. And it's just amazing, you know, someone must be looking above us because... My dad decided to go and pick my daughter up and go and get sushi in Seymour. So they had left, and then I was just getting into the city and I got a phone call from a neighbour down the road saying, you better get home, your house is gone. And turned around, drove home, and my legs didn't work when I got out of the car because there was police, firefighters, people just standing in your house, or in your front yard, and no house left. And I got out and forgot to walk, so I fell over. So
oh, wow.
The neighbour had to pick me up and...
Yeah.
And it was pretty tragic time. But talking to my doctor after that, he goes, imagine if you weren't on your Vyvanse, how would you focus and concentrate? And I thought, no, I wouldn't have had a chance.
No.
I'd have been.
Wow. Like
you know, when the insurance company starts mucking around with you, when at a time when you need to be looked after and the insurance company palms you off to a third party and they're trying to screw you out of every cent.
Yeah.
I had to be focused. I had to become a master of the... public disclosure statement. So I had to read everything. And in the end, because of the ability to do it, actually read this stuff now, they ended up having to pay me an extra $120,000 because they didn't they had clauses in there for temporary accommodation, filling up tanks of water that the CFA used and filling my pool up that the CFA used. And ended up, when they were trying to stuff me around and only giving me half my insurance policy, I said, listen, I've now read through this. You now owe me this. Do you want me to keep reading or do you want to pay me out now? 24 hours later, I had my money.
There you go. So you have a new superpower.
Yeah, I do. I have a new superpower. I don't, you know, and I think that's also that stubbornness. If you're going to try and screw me, I'm gonna fight.
Yeah.
So it was good. And talking to the doctor after it, he just said, imagine if you weren't on your Vyvanse.
Yeah.
You probably would have been a mess. And I said, I wouldn't have achieved what I needed to achieve at that time. You know, day two, I realised, after the fire, I realised I still had the same clothes on.
Yep.
And it's quite funny that Cal's friends all brought clothes for the girls and her, and my friends brought alcohol. And I'm looking at it going,
I think I prefer yours.
Yeah. Couldn't quite wear the stuff they were bringing. And so I said to the old man, I said, oh, we're going to have to go to Kmart and get some clothes. So it's great being a bloke because $100 later I had a wardrobe. And I realised I had to step up because Cal was, you know, she wasn't functioning properly. The kids weren't functioning properly.
Yeah.
And we lost everything, including two pets, a cat and a dog. And I realised I just had to stand up because no one else was going to help. And especially the insurance company should have been there at the time. And so, into the documents, bringing people and just, fighting it. And but what you realise too is community spirit's still there. You know, people that came from nowhere, you never met them. And we're bringing things around. And so that was quite good to see that side.
People can be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Times when they find out that you have nothing. Someone rang me up we never knew and just said, listen, I've got a caravan. Do you want to use it?
Well, you're in the country, aren't you?
Yeah.
We went to Griffith for Michelle to do a TEDx talk.
Yeah.
And the small town hospitality was better than any we've received anywhere around the world.
Yeah. You know, some people complain that everyone knows your business, but sometimes we need you to need them to know your business to help.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, it might be bad on one side, but it's also some benefits to it.
That's it. John, I could talk to you forever, but we've gone for 45 minutes, so we might. Unless, Michelle, have you got another question?
No, well, I just want to know, and so it's going to go longer.
Yeah. Cool.
Is now... Now that you are in control of how you want to be and what you're doing, so you said you stepped up, you felt you had to step up and you were able to do that and because you were focused and you could just see what you needed to do and organize everything. Do you, like, and you're the CEO of and founder of your business? Are you CEO?
One of the founders, but not CEO.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Alistair's the CEO. I'm chief pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah, because... I have more of that flying background, so they all pinned me for being the chief pilot. I drew the short straw on that one.
Yeah. Well, that's a leadership role.
Yeah, it is.
And
yeah.
So do you now feel that any of your training that you did in aviation and with the human factors as well, now being, you know, 100% focused, do you find that you can it's easy to lead? And people follow you. That's the definition of leader.
I have a bit more confidence.
Yeah.
And I think a great leader should be able to express their bad times so people understand bad times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
vulnerability.
We're going to get it. Yeah. You know, no matter what in life, we're around for on average, 70, 80 years. Mm. We're going to have some tough times. And when you can explain to people that are looking up at you that you're going to experience, I've experienced it, here I am, that's a great way of being a leader because, you know, we're not bulletproof. Mm. And that's what I've learned over the years now, that I used to think I was bulletproof and I can handle a lot of things. But, you know, being a leader, you need to show that, you know, there are times where we need to sometimes dig down and find something from within.
Yep.
And all you need is just that one little vent to change your whole mindset and then you're back on track.
Yeah.
And that's what I'll try and teach there because we've got a lot of young kids flying for us now. And that's a great way of being a leader and showing leadership.
Well, how about we finish this podcast with a bit of a promotion? Give us the name of the company again.
Fieldmaster Systems.
Fieldmaster Systems.
How do they find you?
It's all over the website. So they've got to Google Fieldmaster Systems and they'll find us, Facebook, all that sort of stuff. Alistair, our tech guy, takes care of all that.
Awesome.
Okay, Alistair, update the website. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks, John.
No worries. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolute pleasure meeting you, Matt.
Too easy.
Cheers.
Well, that was fun.
That was fun.
You're such a clown.
The clown captain.
Lady captain. Lady.
And who's going to listen to this? Maybe our mums.
Thanks, Mum.